Welcome to the Executive Function Podcast, where we make the invisible keys to success easy for you to teach your child. We'll go beyond theory to proven action, helping you create peace and independence at home and at school with your host, educational author, award-winning teacher, and celebrated learning coach, Sarah Kesty.
Hey everyone, today on the show, we have Deborah Levy, who is a certified life and ADHD and productivity coach. She is a lot of things, and she's the owner of A Life That Fits, which is where she helps clients make time and space for what matters most. And I am truly excited to pick Deborah's brain about some organization strategies, because I know that's something that full honesty here, I struggle with a little bit, and a lot of my clients struggle with as well. So Deborah, thank you so much for being on the show.
I'm very excited to be here.
Yay. Yeah, you reached out to me, and one of the things that instantly grabbed my brain was something that I've observed, you know, because I'm always encouraging people to take this curious peek at their brain and notice what's happening, not in a judgment, but more in a like experimental, sort of strategy laboratory feel. And okay, I've noticed that in my own life, when things are kind of party ready, clean, you know, that like very clean, I could show my friends, but this really isn't how I actually live. My brain seems to feel more settled. And I know organization can be a really helpful tool to boost executive function. What do you tell your clients when you're trying to help them sort of get over that initial, oh, this is going to be hard? Like, what benefits do you see to executive function?
The space that we live in is so much related to how we think. And I noticed that for a lot of people, when their space is erratic and chaotic, it really affects them. And as you know, my past career was as a professional organizer, and I worked with, I'd say like 95% of my clientele had either diagnosed or not ADHD. When we worked together to get their space in shape, it made such a difference for how they got up in the morning, how they proceeded towards the day, because it was almost like the subconscious mental list of all these things they had to do when they looked around them without even thinking about it. And it just made them feel like their mind was even more cluttered.
Oh, yeah. I was recently talking to a brilliant six-year-old who told me it feels like her brain is jumping all the time and it gets confusing. And that makes me think, well, man, if your environment is sort of visually jumping and there's a lot of input, that would feel confusing as well.
I think it also depends on the person. So I had one client who really enjoyed having all of her things around her, but it was more a matter of what her perception of order was. For other people, they need a very, very clean space. So it's very individual. And that's why it's so important, you know, as coaches, that we make sure we understand where the clients are coming from and really what's going to make them feel the most calm, the most focused, the most empowered in their lives.
Such a good point. Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of parents come from in kind of getting to the frustration where they're reaching out for a coach, or like your clients as adults kind of noticing it in themselves is, I've done all the shoulds. I've tried all the tools that I've seen on Pinterest and nothing's really sticking. And I think you and I are here to offer the perspective that yes, and like, yes, these things haven't worked yet, and there's still a whole bunch of tools, and maybe they didn't work because they weren't the right mix for your brain.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's got to work for them. That's why I call my company A Life That Fits, because it's not about getting a square peg to fit in a round hole. It's about building a life around that works for them in a way that works naturally for their inclinations and their modalities, you know, the way they take in and process information, the natural habits. And, you know, there's so many tools out there, but if something actually will resonate, that means that it's going to work and it's going to stick because it's something that they enjoy, you know, or that feels good to them.
That makes a lot of sense. So what could somebody ask themselves to get a feel for what kind of tools might be more brain friendly for them?
In terms of the environment, or is there something else that you're thinking about?
Yeah, just in terms of like, if somebody is like, okay, I'm prepared to start thinking about how to engineer my environment, What are some things they can ask to sort of dip their toe in that thought bucket?
Well, the way that it actually works, and I work with some of my clients who I'm coaching with to kind of change their environment also to reflect what they need. For instance, there is a person who's a CPA, and she has a desk that was kind of filled with paper. We don't start with the tools per se first. We talk about what's happening that's there in front of her and identify why there are piles and different things that are happening. And once we started to look at what each of these things were and kind of sort them into what they were, we were able to see, okay, so these are things that she's working on currently. So they need something that would hold them in a way that's at her fingertips and that's easy for her to see and identify. Other things were she didn't have enough space in her file drawer, and that was because it was stuffed with the previous occupant stuff. So that needed to be unloaded and put in there so that way it was near her, but didn't have to be out in front. And then there was the archive stuff that was like that just needed to be in banker boxes and in another office. So the first step was identifying what's really out there that is not working and to sort it. And then the next process is kind of weeding through, get it down to what you really need, and then find the right spot and the right container to be able to do that, to be able to house it in a way that works for the person.
Yeah. And you described a very long process. And my brain was going, wow, that sounds amazing. Also, when would I have time? And I know that you also really specialize in time management. So when someone's kind of coming to you with, yes, I have this motivation and I need some sort of more augmented executive function tools to stay on track with this project, what kind of things do you offer them?
Well, we talk about how to make it into bite-sized pieces, you know, not take the whole thing and start to work on everything at the same time, because we know that's not going to help, especially with executive function challenges. So it might be, and I'm doing this in terms of a physical thing, but also it can relate to something time-wise like a project. If there is a big ball of stuff, a big box of stuff, as opposed to a big project, we need to kind of really break it down into things that are much more manageable. So that way it doesn't feel so overwhelming. Can I give you an example?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Okay. So if let's say in a physical case, we're talking about a bedroom or a closet to get even more specific. We're not going to go and have them take out everything at the same time. It's just not going to be workable. It's very overwhelming. So we might start with all the things that are hanging up that might be, let's say, pants, you know, and take a category, take a look at it, sort it out into what they want to keep, what they want to discard, what they want to give that belongs to somebody else and so forth, and getting that down to be what is necessary for them. If you look at it in a time management way, if let's say they're working with a team, it might be they're taking a project, they're looking at the different components of it, pulling out one of them and seeing what can they keep for themselves, what are they going to delegate to someone else, or what doesn't have to be done at all and it can be put on the back burner. So time and space and thoughts really are all the same in terms of creating order.
What you're describing too is sort of aligning with your values and your goals, and then using those as a tool for prioritizing rather than having this big, you know, like obligatory, nebulous sense of I'm doing something wrong, I'm not doing enough. Instead, saying, hey, let's brain dump, which is a student tool too, right? Like I have all these projects, let's brain dump, let's get it down and concretize it, make it visual so it's not floating around your brain, and then say, all right, what's my Elsa list? What are the things that I'm letting go? And that can actually be a powerful starting point because that gives you clarity on, okay, now here's what really matters, what's really going to have the biggest bang for my buck.
Yeah, exactly. The delegating piece where you can kind of create a boundary of what's yours and what's not can help to free up time. It frees up space. It frees up, you know, the mental space and the brain. And it's just about breaking it into really, really small, tiny, manageable steps. There's this great book, Atomic Habits by
James Clear.
James Clear. Right, with his 1%, you know, yes. Like a 1% change at a time. It's so powerful. I was working with a client just a little bit earlier today, and we were talking about how she'd like to break up a project into its different components, but she didn't even know where to start with that. So we started talking about this tool called the Time Timer. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, it's a visual timer. So for listeners, Time Timer, just Google it. There's going to be loads of different versions, but basically it gives a colored visual of how much time is passing, like throughout an hour. And it can kind of help you see sort of like the pie chart of time as it's going down.
Yeah, it's a great tool. And what we discovered, we're talking about taking the 1%, that she didn't know how to use the time timer because it didn't seem to be working. So she was even hesitant about doing this project little step because we talked about putting the time timer on so she can visually see it. And then I got to understand that her time timer wasn't working. So like when you get to like the minuscule thing, she's going to put in a battery, the time timer is going to be set, and then she can start experimenting with how much time she needs to use to break down that first task of planning. And it really just gets down to taking that one baby step at a time and then building on it.
Right. And kind of allowing yourself to be very human and look at like, maybe there's a misunderstanding causing the strategies not to work, or maybe you've got a lot of, you know, mental chatter around it. I know for me, when I recommend planners to kids, I learned very quickly to don't say the P word because there's a lot of shutdown around that because they've been given planners as, hey, you need to use this. And it feels like a compliance issue, like top down. But as we kind of discover, you really need a work management system. And I wrote an article for Edutopia about it, about how it's just capture, schedule, and remind. And if you kind of break it down into those components, my clients end up creating their own planner systems. Wow. But again, it was so interesting to kind of dig in and find out that planners very much could be powerful tools for them. And they needed an opportunity to explore the why, explore kind of where some of that like pushback was coming from in their brains. And, you know, for parents, I think the tricky part is, and for students as well, it's slow, you know, and what you described with your client probably took several sessions before she's like, oh, all right, I'm feeling this. Like I got some time timer experience now and I know what actually works for me.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head when you said about with the words, because there could be so many meanings that are attached to that. I had one client I was working on. She has a large family and she wanted to provide a healthy meal for them every night. And she was scrambling and she just abhorred the word meal plan. Now she's really into data and so forth. So when I said spreadsheet, she's like, yes. So all of a sudden, it was a spreadsheet. We talked about a strategy of asking her kids and her husband what they liked about which meals that she prepared, you know, which ones kind of like rate them from 1 to 10. And then we'd be able to kind of figure out the top ones and then be able to pick the top two. So all of a sudden, like you're saying with your students, when they thought of it as a management system, right? That instead of that, it's a whole new world.
Right. And it's a whole new world and it's not new at all.
Right.
I know. Right. And that's not throwing shade on anybody because my brain's like that too. Like I'll push against something. And then if somebody reframes it or if I reframe it for myself, then I'm like, oh, awesome idea. And then a couple months later, you think back and you're like, oh, yeah, I get it now.
Yeah. Reframe. Reframe is big.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. And I love, gosh, you've got so many tools. So I'm so excited. And people who are listening that are grownups who are like, hey, Sarah coaches my kid, or, you know, I've got these kid resources, but what do I do as an adult? We'll like link Deborah's information in the show notes as well, so you can reach out to her. You mentioned kind of the get started component of like acknowledging that it's overwhelming, finding those bite-sized steps, using some tools. The second part of that that I really see people struggle with is the maintenance. Like our brain gets a big boost of dopamine when we think about this new system because it feels exciting. You know, it's like at the beginning of the school term, we go shop for school supplies and we end up with this like huge bucket of stuff at Target. And then we get home and like kind of use it, kind of don't. It sort of wears off in novelty. I imagine that same pattern emerges with organization systems. Like you get it beautiful. And then a couple weeks later, you're like, oh yeah, I used to do this thing. So what tips do you have for people to kind of engage in that maintenance that maybe doesn't feel as exciting, but sure is important?
Yeah. So for different people, it's different things, but you're absolutely right. There needs to be some maintenance component in there. Otherwise the systems fall apart. So for some people, you know, having a very specific time of the day and a specific time of the week to look at things. I'm going to work more now in the time management analogy, but it applies to everything else. And I'll maybe go back and forth with it, is to pick a time when it's really conducive and sets them up for success. So I have one client who has a very busy life, and we talk about how planning and looking ahead at the week is really important. So for her, it ended up being 5:30 in the morning on a Sunday, which would never be for me. I'm not an early morning person. But for her, she takes a big cup of coffee. She goes to her pretty office in her home. It's before the kids wake up. And she spends some time looking over things and being able to kind of have an overview and plugging in the different components that we talk about, you know, the anchors that happen all the time, the different things that are being adjusted. And she's grown to really enjoy that time because not only did she set up her space for it, but she has this clarity because there's no other distractions or noise going on with that. For another person, it might be, let's say they're in their office and they've got a whole bunch of stuff. We talk about ramping down at the end of the day. And this can be the same process for anybody, whether it's at home or work. Ramping is really about like ramping up to something and giving the time allowed till you start your project or task. And then the ramp down could be as simple as putting away the groceries after coming home with them and putting the reusable bags by the door so that way you remember to take it to your car. So there's that component of allowing that time to be able to transition out of what they were doing and put the things away where they belong that helps to maintain that on an ongoing basis. You know, that's just a tiny example of, you know, what I work with my clients to do that.
Yeah, that's a great example. And I'm hearing you describe it as like, it's a step. It's a step in the process. And as it becomes habitual, it becomes habituated. It becomes part of your routine where it doesn't feel like extra to maintain it.
Yeah, I think people don't allow for those ramps. And that's what messes people up with time a lot. Because if, let's say, the whole shopping trip in their mind takes an hour, but really they need 15 minutes prior to get their coupons and their list together, to get those bags, go to the car, come back because they forgot something, you know, and allow that. And then the aftermath of doing what we just talked about with that ramping down, it's really like an hour and a half. So that if they allow that amount of time, then instead of just the hour, there is this built-in, you know, getting things organized and back into place that they didn't realize before. And it's part of that process. It's part of that step.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Where I've come to realize in my own business, like part of where I was feeling a lot of stress was kind of following up with clients and making sure that I show my people a lot of love. And that always felt like I left something undone because, hello, I didn't have time in my schedule for it. I had time, but I was stealing it from other spots because I hadn't accounted for it. Right. So once I had said, okay, every, like, it's my ritual now, I've got it kind of at several spots in the day. Now it feels fun and part of what I do rather than this guilty, oh no, I didn't follow up fast enough kind of feeling that was hindering me and almost making it like take more time because of that secondary sort of judgment of myself.
Yeah. And you built it in so that you're able to expect that that's going to be needed.
Perfect. And by the way, for people who are listening, they're like, wait a minute, you guys are executive function experts. Why do you need strategies? Because we're human.
We all do. Absolutely.
Yeah. I think I wouldn't trust an expert, and I just used air quotes, who didn't use their own strategies because that seems a little sketch. So yeah, I have human moments all the time and, you know, go back to my values and my priorities as well and, you know, revamp as I need to because that's what we do, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, I know when I'm getting ready for a client, I will take about 15 minutes prior, get myself situated, get my notes ready. Afterwards, I'll give myself a few minutes to be able to, you know, to get everything together and put my things away so that I move on to the next thing. But there's another point I want to bring out about making sure that things are taken care of and put away and so forth to maintain the system. For some people, they're aware that they need to do it, but they just don't feel like it because there's no dopamine hit going on with cleaning up everything, right? Mm-hmm. So one of my clients just mentioned, she just heard a lecture from somebody that it's all about figuring, do you want to give this to your future self to do? And most of the time, the answer is no, because you know that future self is going to be busy with other things. So would that future self feel better that you've given it to them? You know, and it's about thinking forward, because a lot of times with executive function challenges, especially ADHD, there's this time blindness and they don't think about what that future is going to feel like down the horizon. And it makes it feel more now like, all right, let me take that time to ramp down because I know my future self's not going to feel like doing it.
Yeah. Gosh, that's a beautiful example and kind of speaks to the idea of that decision fatigue. And like, you know, you want to kind of keep your cognitive budget in mind every day. So that's basically like how much mental energy you have, and especially like for decisions. And so if we think about it, if you can kind of front load your day and make a couple of decisions for tomorrow you at night, that's just like a boost for the next day that helps kind of alleviate some of the demands. And you might as well spend the rest of your budget because you're going to bed.
I love that. That's a great way of putting it.
Well, thanks. Hey, we have to come up with analogies because sometimes this stuff feels so heady and nebulous and theoretical, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thinking about a battery that gets drained.
You know? That's another one. Yeah. And so it's like, well, you're gonna plug in just a second by sleeping. So might as well just spend it.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned earlier the concept of anchors, and I wanted to go back and kind of expand on that if you don't mind. What did you mean by that?
Anchors are the things that occur for us on a regular basis consistently. So it might be mealtime, morning routines, nighttime routines, different meetings that we have on an ongoing basis, different appointments that we might have with doctors or activities or things with friends. So these are the things, it's almost like, you know, the analogy with the glass jar with the trying to fit all the pebbles and I mean the rocks, the pebbles in the sand. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with that? So it's those rocks. So you have to, when you put your rocks into the schedule, then you see how much room you have around it for those pebbles. And then you see how much room you have around it for the sand. And those pebbles might be things that happen consistently, but they can be moved around a little bit, like food shopping or, you know, a library date or whatever. And then the sand might be the things that you always want to take care of, but you never get to. But when you start to see where those pockets are, then you can make a more proactive choice and be able to use that time in a way that works for you.
That makes a lot of sense. And those of you who are like, well, what are they talking about? Like putting rocks in a glass jar. I'll find a helpful YouTube video that I actually used to show my 7th and 8th grade students to kind of help them think about and conceptualize sort of value-based use of time. And I'll put a link in the show notes so that you can geek out on that stuff.
Some people are visual. We need to see. Like,
yeah, yeah, totally. And I think it helps kind of give them concrete examples rather than having it be just so theoretical, because this stuff can be very difficult to conceptualize. Like maybe you understand it at a base level, but what does that look like day to day? You know? Uh-huh.
Yeah. Can I mention one other thing about anchors?
Yeah, go for it.
I'm working with a client who does not like to be constricted into time. She just finds that it's, she pushes against it. And she knows that there's a certain flow that we talked about in her day and her work that she needs to take care of. Let's say looking at emails, then doing some reports, and then doing some projects. And we had talked about trying out, you know, like from this time to kind of create little boundaries that she doesn't hyper-focus. And the good thing is that when something doesn't work, we take a look at what's not working about it and then tweak it. So we then talked about how to make 12 o'clock the anchor of when she finishes these three things, because the really important thing she needed to get to after lunch was then bleeding out into her time to go home and spend with her family. And she's going to start to try and see, all right, I know I have until 12 to do these things. So at least that anchor there is my time limit of what I can do. And then I know if I start the other thing right afterwards, it's going to give me the amount of time I need. So it's more of a switch in perspective about that, even though it's still a time constraint, but it's also, it's like tweaking it to make it work for her.
Oh, that's brilliant. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So there's still the mental freedom of I can bend and flex as my brain neurochemistry needs that day. And I have a little bit of structure so that I don't fall off the rails completely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes tons of sense. And I love that idea too of being mindful of like, okay, well, because I've been resistant to structure, now things are kind of flowing out into spots where I don't want them. I don't want work to be blending into my family time. So where can I be creative and kind of go to that strategy playground?
Yeah. And it all depends on the person. So each person's going to have a different strategy or tool or technique that works for them better than others.
Right. And you're not going to get it right the first time most of the time.
Yeah.
Right. Like I tell my clients, like, hey, when a strategy feels bumpy or maybe had some components that we didn't predict, that's validation that we're not psychic. That has nothing to do with any sort of story about you not being fixable or worthy or any of those things. And I, again, on a podcast, you can't see me, but fixable was in air quotes because we're not fixing anyone. We're just sort of engineering small changes to make the environment and your brain a little bit less clashy.
Yeah. Yeah. Great way to describe it.
Thanks. I'm not quite sure if clashy is a word, which is why I laughed when I said it, but you know, I never quite know what comes out of this space of my face, you know? Always well-intended, but sometimes a little silly. That's my brand. Deborah, man, this has been fun. I'm so excited. And I already have people that I'm like, I need to connect you with Deborah. So where can listeners find you?
So I have my website, alifethatfits.com. And also, I don't know in your show notes if you'll have any links to, I'm on LinkedIn and Instagram and on Facebook. They can find me there as well. And there's also a page on my website that has a bunch of resources having to do with ADHD and executive function or about organization and time management. So I hope that's helpful as well.
Yeah. Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah. I'll put a link directly to the page and then also how to find you to work with you. All that good stuff. Thank you so much for being here. This was really fun.
You're welcome. I really enjoyed it as well.
Thank you for listening to the Executive Function Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please head over to sarahcasti.com, where you'll find more resources and chances to connect with others. And please remember to like and review the show wherever you listen to this podcast. We're eager to transform the lives of even more families.